the mind-body connection is so meaningful that often the body's trying to signal to us what's going on in our larger experience. And so it's worth our attention.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Welcome, everybody. I'm very happy to have you all here and really happy to have Jess Seitz with us. Jess is a trauma-informed pelvic floor occupational therapist, and she's the founder of Pain-Free Intimacy, where she works as a vaginismus recovery coach. She has a background in nervous system regulation and chronic pain management and uses this to offer a unique approach to vaginismus recovery. Jess was inspired to help others after having healed from a long journey of vaginismus herself, a journey full of setbacks, poor advice, loneliness, and inconsistent progress. And so wanting to help other women see the progress they're desiring with genuine support and care, she developed a comprehensive vaginismus program that has helped hundreds of women turn pain into pleasure. So welcome, Jess, and I'm really, really glad to have you actually on this topic because pain during intercourse is a far more common problem than I think a lot of people realize. If we could just start with you helping listeners understand what causes pain during sex, right? Why is this an experience that so many women have?
Well, thank you, first off, for making space for this conversation. Because like you said, I mean, it affects so many women and it's a part of my own story. And it's important to talk about it because there are so many reasons that can cause painful sex. It's really hard to measure how many women have pain with intercourse, but some numbers say up to 22% of women experience pain with sex. That's a lot. Yes. There can be a lot of reasons why one would experience pain with sex. You know, it can be structural. It could be, a muscle imbalance. It could be hormonal. But I have found that regardless of what the initial cause of that painful experience is, the body really quickly latches on to pain in that area. And yes, maybe that original cause has, you know, ameliorated with time or gotten better. The body still is giving us that pain signal. So that's what lasts and lasts and lasts. And why a lot of times we go to the doctor and they'll say everything looks good. And so that's what I hear a lot on my end is the doctors don't know, or, you know, it's very nice if we go to the doctor and we get a formal diagnosis. And those are things like lichen sclerosis that we can get, possibly endometriosis, although that one's hard too. Hypertonic pelvic floor is always thrown around there, which is a pelvic floor that's a little too excited and tight. All of those can more lead to chronic conditions of pain that just last despite kind of working through the original reason why it's pain.
And I know we'll get into it more, but can you say a little bit more about that? Because yes, I have definitely worked with clients where their first intercourse is painful. And then the next time they're afraid. And so their body's kind of seizing a little bit. Like, I love this person. I want to be close to them, but I am afraid to have a second painful experience. Right. So it's almost like they're less aroused. Their body's less prepared. That's kind of my working idea. But why do you think when you're saying that the body almost learns a pain response, even if, you know, you're in a new relationship or whatever was causing the pain in the first place has been resolved, if say that's an anatomical or hormonal issue. Can you say more about that? Is there a understanding of why the body learns that response and how to make sense of it? Do you have a theory of that?
I have a theory and it is a lot of my background and what I work with. So I work in chronic pain science and nervous system kind of manifestation of pain, specifically in the context of sex and intimacy. And so even today I got a message from a client who had a realization that she and her husband were not, they took penetrative sex off the table, which a lot of our clients in our program do. And they were having a wonderful makeout session. And all of a sudden she was having vaginal pain. He had touched nothing. mm-hmm. but she was having the same pain she experienced during mm-hmm. intercourse. And, you know, she's like, what's happening here? Mm. And I mean, it is kind of like that basic association kind of thing where, you know, what is it, Pavlov with the dog and the saliva, he'd mm-hmm. ring the bell and feed the dog a treat mm-hmm. and eventually the bell eating mm-hmm. saliva. And unfortunately we're doing that with intimacy. And I think it's even more pronounced because it's so intimate and so vulnerable. And so I yeah. think, like, you know, God has gifted us, especially us women, with incredible ability to feel amazing things during intimacy. We get the highest of highs during yeah. deep, a wonderful, great, beautiful, safe, connected intimacy. But we also get the lowest of lows yeah. when there's a threat. And when there's pain, that's a threat. And so I think it happens very quickly that the body learns, I have got to protect her. I've yes. got to keep him out, even though we yes. love him, we trust him, we never sure. had any reason not to necessarily. But that experience wasn't just painful physically. It is vulnerably painful. It's emotionally painful. It's psychologically, it's spiritually painful. It's all categories of who we are as women just got hit with pain. And the body very quickly says that will not happen again. Mm-hmm. And it will give us even more pain, almost as a protective mechanism. Some of women's bodies completely close up and they don't let him in. Mm-hmm. And they'll experience that tightness kind of wall sensation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things can lead to that learned response, whether it's a physiological condition or the first time we weren't aroused enough and so it hurt, or, you know, a past history of sexual abuse or trauma, or, you know, even a really bad tampon insertion experience can lead our body to going into protective mode, as it should. It really should. We should celebrate that it's doing that for us.
Yeah.
But it's also sad because we want to have fun, amazing, great sex.
Yeah, but the good part of it, I think, is true, is that, you know, in the Bessel van der Kolk idea that the body keeps the score, you know, I often teach women that women have amazing sexual capacity. I would say women have more sexual capacity than men do for pleasure, for orgasmic response, but women are pickier. And biologically, it makes a ton of sense that we're pickier because you're letting someone into your body. You run the risk of pregnancy, of disease. And even if you get pregnant, not only can you die in childbirth, historically especially, you have to raise this thing. So it's like highly vulnerable behavior. And so for the body to be very protective, you know, even if you don't desire, your body might even be aroused, but you don't desire to be there. It's like your body tracks that, and your body's going to be less responsive if you're at cross purposes. So even if pain is not there, if you're not really listening to, you know, your sexual self, and trying to kind of force another answer than where it is, it can create a kind of rebellion of the body, I think.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. Oh yeah. And I mean, rebellion, I almost think like overprotection mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's rebelling against what we hope it would do, but yes. it's exactly what it's designed to do.
I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah.
To protect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And so somebody wrote in a question about, let me just read what she said. She says, when one has a history of vaginismus, how would you recommend going into a new sexual relationship marriage to minimize the chances of it recurring? She says, in marriage number one, I had no problems. In marriage number two, I never achieved intercourse due to vaginismus because of relationship problems. So she's asking, how do I minimize the chances of it recurring in a third relationship?
I'm sure there's a lot more to this question.
Yes.
Behind the surface.
Yes. So maybe just how would you think about it, or what would be the kind of driving questions for you?
I mean, I would want to kind of look at maybe the difference between marriage one and marriage two without trying to get into a deep comparison. But if there are relationship problems, then that isn't a huge indicator. It depends on what type and to the what extent. I mean, our number one thing we want to achieve is safety. And so if there's even an emotional disconnect, we're not going to feel safe enough for physical opening. Because as you said, for women, it's a lot. We're a lot more than that. We are emotional opening and all of these things. So we have to feel safe in almost every domain, a significant level of safety, in order for our body to be willing to let him in without pain and all of this. And so we want to make sure marriage number three, or relationship number three, is going to have the utmost amount of safety that we can. Now, the body, unfortunately, has probably learned some patterns. So this is not going to be like a three-step answer. Basically, this would be a client I would work with, and we would have a bit to unfold. And we'd have to rebuild that safety within our body, and to teach it that this is not only possible, it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be good, but we are going to have to unlearn, relearn, create safety, reinforce safety. And it is an across all domains: emotional, physical, spiritual, psychological. I wish I could give you three steps.
Well, one of the things I'm thinking about what you're saying, and sometimes I resist the word safety in relationships, but not because I think people should be doing things against their interests, that's for sure. Or if someone doesn't feel like the person they're with doesn't have their best interests in mind, right? That all matters, of course. So I'm not like against safety, but to love is to risk, you know? To love is to take a chance of letting someone into your life, into your body. I think at least the way I think about it, is you want to make a good choice. You want to be with someone that you trust, but that you really can bring your full self to it, that you're not divided. You're not trying to earn something or manage something in them, but working against your own soul. Because I think that's when the body is the most reactive. Because I think sex is so connected to our souls, to kind of the core of who we are. And so, yes, it's about good judgment. I agree with you. I would be like, what was happening in your first marriage? What was happening in your second? And how were those relationships different? And was there a kind of self-betrayal happening in the second marriage? Right.
Right.
And what is the third relationship like? And is there a kind of self-betrayal where you're trying to be something or get something or earn something or prove something? Because I think a lot of times when we're in that with someone that we can't fully be ourselves with, then I think you're more likely to have a body that doesn't go along with the self-betrayal.
Yeah, I agree. It's not, you know, safety. I think we can almost like simplify that word too much and like, okay, well, I'm not physically being abused or, you know, safety for me too even means like I feel like I could say no to sex right now and it's not going to cause an emotional fallout between us, or it's not going to lead to him doing something.
Punishing, like, being right.
And that I would say is, you know, that's shame, that's pressure, that's fear, that's criticism all in there. And it's hard, I would say, for the body to feel safe enough to open up and be vulnerable when there is kind of that fear or potential for repercussion that was a one element I would say. There's so much. I like that self-betrayal that you mentioned is
key. I think such a good indicator in a relationship is that I can be myself here, that I can bring the core of who I am. I think when our body is most open is that you know me and I can let you know me deeply. And so I think that psychological freedom is really a part of that. I would love to hear more of your thoughts about anatomical challenges, hormonal challenges. So beyond the psychological, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, assuming all is well in your relationship, and I know that these things are less categorical than sometimes we might think, but what kinds of hormonal and physical challenges are a part of vaginismus or painful intercourse?
So hormonal, I mean, that opens a lot of doors in a lot of ways, but hormonal imbalances can often, probably the biggest thing, lead to libido imbalance in a sense, or just a lower desire. And there isn't necessarily anything wrong with lower desire or higher desire, as what matters is going to be communicating that and working through that. But, you know, if you have a lower desire, you would want to support that. And you could either do that through supplementing with hormones. Definitely talk to a doctor, seek some good wisdom with that because it's not always the best intervention. But I often find like there's a lot of things we can do within our everyday environment and routine to help support lifting that libido without necessarily needing bigger interventions like drugs. And so even thinking about sex throughout your day can shift mm-hmm. how hormones are released and uptaken in your body. So, mm-hmm. yeah. And it doesn't have to be massive sex scenes that you're thinking about throughout your day. It can be you're on a walk and you're just trying to, you know, you're practicing maybe mindfulness while you're walking and feeling in your body. And then you're like, you know, I'm thinking about what do I feel in my hands right now? What do I hear with my ears? Do we think about what is my clitoris and my vulva feeling right now? We don't ever attend to that area. So it doesn't have to be hypersexual, but even just thinking about
attention.
Attention mm-hmm. to that area can stimulate all kinds of wonderful juicy hormones going. Mm-hmm. And that can last until the evening when husband gets home. And it starts earlier in the day on the walk that you're mindful and you're coming into your body and you allowed your brain to turn that spot online, which now allows receptors and hormones and blood flow and all the things that come to that area that can help. And even just focusing on simple things like this, we found a lot with our clients have been able to increase libido because, I mean, yeah, you're thinking about it, you're inviting it in and you're welcoming it. As long as we're not doing it in a negative way, like obviously if there's fear and stuff, it does the opposite effect. So there are, I mean, a bunch of, I think, things you can do environmentally to help support hormones. I think personally, the biggest is minimizing corticosteroids. So minimizing cortisol in the system. Cortisol just blocks all the healthy, wonderful, great sex
hormones. Yeah, high stress response.
High stress and mm-hmm. lack of sleep and all the stuff that, you know, is causing us to have facial swelling and upset stomachs is also disrupting our libidos and our ability to even get natural lubrication down there because our cortisol is flooding the system. Estrogen, testosterone, all those wonderful, beautiful hormones are not able to do what they're supposed to do.
That's so interesting. You know, I heard a phrase once like the best sex is vacation sex. And it's not so dramatic mm-hmm. of a phrase, but you know, that is to say we're kind of designed for vacation sex. That is when stress is low, when we're don't have a schedule in our heads. But I'm sure that's right, that many of us have so much like of if we are more anxious, if we live in a high stress environment, if we are, you know, have difficulty kind of giving ourselves space and freedom. Our body's like, we got to survive. We don't have time to reproduce. So your body's not going to move into that sexual space very easily. Yeah, I'm sure that's right. Yeah. So then, Jess, are there anatomical reasons? I know I have a client who had surgery and no longer had pain. She had other psychological challenges that were still there, even when the pain was reduced through a surgery. But what do you know about the anatomical issues and do you have thoughts about that?
So it just depends on, I guess, angle. I mean, you can have dermatological things happening down there that I would really strongly encourage someone to see a vulva or dermatologist who specializes in that to see creams and stuff. It's not so common. Definitely, if you have had any trauma to the area, including vaginal delivery, that can increase scar tissue. Scar tissue can... it's not always painful, but it can lead to less stretching of different areas, which could create a pain response. Surgery is not always the most prevalent intervention for that. If there's a deeper achier pain, I have found that tends to sometimes lend to endometriosis. Not always. Mm-hmm. Only way to really work through endometriosis these days, unfortunately, is surgery. Doesn't always cure that pain though, because it's again become a learned response. Yeah. And then probably the one that irritates me the most is a hymenectomy. There's a lot of misunderstanding about the hymen and its role and if it's still around. And it's a small percentage, like I think it's maybe less than 1% of women have intact hymens still. And it's pretty rare. And unfortunately, vaginismus gets misdiagnosed as a hymen issue quite often. And I've had a lot of clients come into my program who had a hymenectomy with no change afterwards. And so a hymen is just a thin layer of skin that would cover the vaginal opening that we're born with, but it usually dissolves in, right around the time you get your period. And then usually by the time all of us are married, it's pretty much gone. In the rare chance that you still have some of it intact, you would surgically want it to get removed. It's a pretty quick recovery all in all, and it should fix your problem. But a lot of times doctors, because if someone has vaginismus and their muscles are just so clenched down in protection, and misdiagnose, I don't see a hole, so it must be a hymen. And we do a surgery that's not necessarily needed, and it can lead to more trauma. So I think those are the major physiological or structural issues that I've encountered.
Okay. So why would you say that pushing through pain, right? Because some people think, okay, well, this hurts. I've definitely had clients who feel this way. I'm in pain, but I don't want to let him know. I'm just going to kind of endure it and hope that he finishes quickly and that that's just the way this needs to be. So what's your view of why that is not a good response? I mean, it seems obvious, but I think your thoughts about it would be good.
It seems obvious, but I mean, I suffered with vaginismus for 8 years and we could get him in, but it hurt. And I felt, and this was my husband made put no pressure on me. I just, as a wife to do this, I would hide my face in a pillow and cry tears. Pray that he come finish faster, and just, it was excruciating. And it was not him half the time. It was me and pressure, obligation. I need to fulfill my wifely duties. Like, what is going to happen if I don't do this? So I just want to say to this person, it seems obvious, but even as a therapist myself, pushed through the pain for 8 years. And you know what it did? It made it all worse. It obviously is going to make it worse. You're teaching your body to really fear intimacy. You may think you want it, but your body is cringing and it's suffering and it's struggling. And we were not designed to endure that. We were designed to have such amazing, great, safe, positive, beautiful sex. And we've ruined what God's given us. So don't do it. If you're in pain, I always tell my clients, if you're in a pain above a 3 or 4 out of 10, don't do it. It's not worth it, because that area will hold on. And a long journey towards healing.
Yeah. And so then the next question that comes in, this, the categories of questions are then, how do we build a bridge then? Because my spouse wants penetrative sex, wants to be close. I have pain. I have anxiety. How do we not undermine our marriage then if I can't resolve this? And so what would you say?
Well, I would say we could resolve it. We can, there's hope. We can get past this. It is possible to heal from, majority of the women I've met who've had pain, we've been able to get through it. So I don't want to give hopelessness of this is what the rest of your marriage is like. And I want to strongly encourage this couple and any listening to do whatever it takes to get there. Because what is happening right now is not how we're designed to live life. And this might be a pretty bad example, but I equate it to, like, if you flip the situation and imagine that every time he was to have penetrative sex, it was like you kicked him in the balls, and he was in excruciating pain. There's no way he would want to engage in that activity, and there's no way you'd want to watch him be in that activity.
Yeah,
because he was in so much pain in such a vulnerable area during an activity that should be so good and beautiful. But we as women think that we are supposed to just—it's supposed to be painful. Yeah. Push through it. And so we minimize our experience. But I just want to say to that person, and even to myself back then, you're worthy of being able to do this without pain. And you should not have to go through pain. And his need for pleasure, and I know this sounds extreme, but his need for pleasure is not greater than your need to be pain-free. We are not meant to be wounded and hurt so that somebody else can have joy.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to mutually come together in marriage, and this isn't mutual.
No,
even if you're consensual, it's not mutual if it's hurting you.
Yeah.
And so I would say, let's quickly figure out what to do to get past this. Let's get answers if we can. But I would really encourage finding other ways to have so much connective fun together that don't involve pain.
So when a client comes into you, because, you know, I know every situation is different, but just to give some tangible ideas to people to understand what help looks like. If someone comes in and says, I'm having pain with intercourse, I want to solve it. What's your first order of business? What are you trying to help them do or understand?
Well, I'd say first off, we take a step back and, you know, we definitely take penetrative sex insertion off the table to allow their body's time to heal and to breathe, relax in a sense, remove that pressure.
Yeah.
In that space of breathing, that's when we're going to build that safety that we kind of talked about. But we're going to start with ourselves. We're going to understand our own body, our own mind. What are our fears? What are our shames? What are our, you know, deepest desires? Try and figure out what's happening in the brain when it comes to sex and intimacy, or even outside of that, you know, in our basic relationship. And we're going to figure out the body. We're going to learn the basics of our anatomy. We're going to take a look at ourselves. We're going to understand where are we feeling the pain, and what side of, you know, our vulva or our vagina are we feeling the pain, and what makes that pain worse? What makes that pain better? Does the pain feel the same with movement or just insertion or, you know, different? Yeah. So we're going to study our bodies and get really comfortable and familiar with them. I do a lot with purity culture too. That kind of goes back to the mindset piece. We're going to look at a lot of purity culture. What messages did we inevitably kind of adopt that maybe we're not even aware of about ourselves and our bodies and marriage and intimacy and sex, and unpack some of that? We're going to look at a relationship and kind of, you know, what walls have we built up against him? A lot of our clients, myself included, my husband could come up and give me a hug from behind and I would flinch. Not because, again, my husband is the most compassionate guy ever, but I was so afraid what that hug was going to lead to.
Yeah.
And so that takes backing up quite a bit and looking at, why do I flinch when my husband touches me now? You know, what is it about his presence that invokes that pressure and that fear? So we're going to unpack some of that, and then we're going to rebuild. We're going to rebuild in a really positive way. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's not quick, but it's beautiful and it's deep and it's really, can be really healing.
Yeah, one of the things that I teach a lot in my classes is how much desire is linked to a sense of freedom. And we very often socialize women and men in precisely the wrong way. When we tell women sex is their marital duty, that it's part of taking care of a man, right? That you're pushing on that kind of nurturing, long-suffering muscle that women have often because we're wired to take care of offspring, people that can't survive without our sacrifices. But then we use that in sex to the detriment of desire and joy for a woman, because women want to feel free, free to be themselves, free to be joyful, to not have to take care of someone's needs. Actually, it's like you want the opposite of what you're doing during the day. You want the freedom to be taken care of, perhaps, but not to take care of someone, especially at the expense of your comfort. If we think, if I let you touch me now, I'm obligated tonight. I mean, yeah, your body's going to seize, especially if you have pain. Mm-hmm. And it's like your body's signaling to you something is not right, right? I am overly stressed. I am. And I'm saying it's all the husband's fault, you know, but like I am in relationship to my body and this marriage in a way that's interfering with my sense of freedom and ease. And what do I have to address? So I appreciate what you're saying. It's starting to unpack. What are the meanings? What's happening inside of me between us? You know, I had a client who had vaginismus, was a year into marriage, had never had intercourse, and she married a really good guy. Truly good guy, who she was attracted to even. But she'd grown up in a home that was not only really religious, but her mother had a lot of kind of hatred of men and a hatred of sex, like just a lot of shaming of my client as an adolescent around her sexuality and so on. And so there was this kind of almost built-in loyalty to this hyper virtue idea, like the hyper this asexual ideal almost as a way of being loyal to mom, you know. And so she actually went to a pelvic floor physical therapist. She was working with me, but she was also working with a physical therapist. And just, I can't remember what the treatment is, but the dilators, right? And she was learning to relax the muscles around the dilators and just working with her body. And what was very striking was that as she would relax the vaginal muscles that were instinctively, you know, tight, like just like she'd never like consciously thought, you know, it's almost like her body's learning this is what's going to keep you safe. That as she would release those muscles, she would hear the word slut in her mind. So like these, so the cycle, you know, like the the mind-body connection is so powerful. And so like if she would let her body be free, it's like her mind would tell her something bad was going to happen. And, you know, she continued to work through it and she became capable of intercourse and became capable of joy with him and not, you know, she worked through a lot of those meanings that affected not just her sexual relationship and a relationship to her husband, but her relationship to her own sense of self, right? So it's very important work beyond just the pain issue or the pleasure of sex. But it was very striking for me to see that her body was holding a meaning that she wasn't even really aware of until she started to work with her body.
Exactly. And that's it. That's exactly how I like the word impressive, but it doesn't always seem good in this situation. You know, we do a lot of insertion exercises. We have dilators and we do stretches and exercise and all the physical stuff that can oftentimes release some of that internal stuff. And I actually similarly had a client who heard her mother's words, the negative words that were spoken over her upon inserting dilator. And that unlocked so much for us to be able to kind of like, okay, this is the area that you're trapped, you're bound. And no matter how much your husband whispers wonderful things to you right now, that's deep. That's deep. That was when you were 12 years old that you were heard those words about sex. And it's so interesting how vulnerable that part of us is.
Yeah.
And we don't do a lot, you know, you assume when you're getting married and you're like, okay, we're going to have sex. It's going to be great. I assumed it was a biological thing that just was going to work itself out and figure it out, understanding the layers and the years and stuff. And then what my pelvic floor had done after that, how tight it had gotten, how angry it had gotten and how much it wanted to protect me. Right. And so, yeah, working the physical and the emotional, it's like all these elements together can unlock a lot.
Yeah, 100%. Hey everyone, you've heard me speak about Cozy Earth's products for the last several months, most especially their amazing, luxurious sheets. Recently, Cozy Earth sent me some of their beach towels that have that same luxurious feel. Most beach towels are scratchy and uncomfortable, but because of that viscose blend, I believe that's what it is, they're just soft, plush, absorbent, and amazing. And if you no longer need beach towels, Cozy Earth also has bath towels that have that same plush, absorbent, elevated feel that their beach towels do. Cozy Earth stands behind everything they make with a 10-year warranty. And so head to CozyEarth.com and use my code JFF20 for an exclusive 20% off. That's JFF20 for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see a post-purchase survey, mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here.
Can I ask a question that came
up? Sure.
Since you brought up endometriosis, once endo is successfully removed, how can you unlearn the pain response that came from so many years of actual pain? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I'm so sorry that I'm guessing that you have endometriosis. I'm glad that you were able to have it removed. I actually just had endometriosis removed this past year. And it's a lot to go through that. So pelvic floor therapy can be really helpful because it's going to go in and do a lot of kind of that muscle tension release that has kind of been guarded by the adhesions from endometriosis. So I would start there. and build upon that, because that may or may not be the answer. I know a lot of women have been through pelvic floor therapy and it's not answered everything. And so then kind of recognizing that there is that learned component that this person's messaging or, you know, asked about. And so pain is always a protective response. Even if you put your hand on a hot stove, you get pain to tell your hand to lift up. And so we just have to kind of really reinforce messages that I do not need protection from this anymore. And so pelvic floor therapy can definitely help with that. But I would really challenge the brain to, during pelvic floor therapy, kind of like what Jennifer was just saying with this client, to work with, okay, I'm having the physical work done. Let me pair that cognitive work with it so I can release this need for protection and that pain response.
Yeah. This person says, I've struggled with vaginismus and painful intercourse for many years. I also struggle with pelvic varicose veins. It's gotten even more painful now that I entered menopause 2 years ago. My husband has been so kind about it that he struggles with even wanting to approach me sexually because he knows it hurts me. Our intimate life has brought much sadness recently because of this. I recently started HRT, hormone replacement therapy, and am hoping this will help. I have seen doctors regarding my pelvic veins, and there's nothing that can be done there. I have pelvic floor therapy scheduled for the first time next month. I know this will help me, but I'm worried I will be embarrassed there. Can my husband and I have an intimate relationship? And if so, how?
Oof. I want to reach out and give this woman a hug because that's a lot to go through. Each one of those things is very heavy. So first off, can my husband and I have an intimate relationship again? Yes. Yes. First off, intimate relationship is not defined by penetrative sex.
Yeah.
We can do way more. We're so much more creative as women and as couples to have fun in different ways. And as someone who had vaginismus, I really hated when people told me that because I know we want the thing we can't have.
Yeah.
But I want to help you release yourself from that, because right now that's way too much to work through and at the expense of this last question of, can I have an intimate relationship? Yes. And I would prioritize figuring out how to have an intimate relationship without pain right now.
Yeah.
While the medical stuff is all being sorted through, don't wait. It is possible. I would remove penetrative sex or anything off of the table.
I agree.
Just free yourself up from that pressure. Then you will be fully able to be engaged in an intimate relationship without shaming yourself for not being able to do this one act. That's not even the pinnacle for women. So
I agree completely. For women, the pinnacle is often really feeling desired, feeling like the object of desire, like the feeling like and the ability to enjoy each other. And, you know, when people are dating, especially religious couples who are choosing to have sex in marriage, they're doing a lot of enjoying each other and simmering in that good sexual energy without intercourse and having a great time. Okay. I mean, really, like they're kind of in that energy of attraction and pleasure. And so it's interesting that we get so fixated on, listen, I'm an intercourse enthusiast. So I understand why intercourse, that we like it. Okay. And why, but we place such high priority that like it is the definer of sex, and intercourse seldom stimulates women and is the biggest source of pleasure. It is for men often the, you know, what they most want. Okay. But it's interesting that we make that the defining reality when it is so seldom what stimulates women sufficiently to orgasm and pleasure. And so broadening that definition and learning to consider the glue of the marriage is the ability to enjoy and be enjoyed. And if intercourse is actually not doing that for both people, it's not the right thing at this point, right? And so is there a way we can enjoy and be enjoyed, have pleasure together without pain, as you say? So, you know, there may be some disappointment that intercourse isn't on the table, but there's still so much joy to have together, especially if you can forgive yourselves for that fact, for that reality. Because a lot of times we have such an idealized idea about what good sex needs to be. So,
right. Jennifer, could you model what a conversation like that would go, how that would go with a husband that believes he just has needs when you're going to take sex off the table? Yeah.
I need someone to be the husband, maybe.
I know. Well, I just asked. Okay, she said she's willing to do that. Let me just figure out how to unmute.
Okay, sure, sure.
I also do in the, we have created a guide to help women speak up for this too, and how to have a conversation about, you know, arousal. And I can't, you know, penetrative sex is not something that my body can handle right now too, because it is such an awkward, hard conversation. Mm-hmm. So just to say that this person's not alone, this is, I would say, a conversation that takes prayer and thought ahead of time too.
Do you want to do the role play, Jess, or do you want me to take a whack at it and then you can say what you do? What do you think? You want to do the role play?
I think go for it, Jennifer. Yeah.
Okay. I'll do my best and then you tell me what you would add or subtract. So this might be what I would say. So you're going to be the husband. I realize that I have been doing something that's working against us as a couple. And I think it's coming out of kind of my desire to not disappoint you. But because intercourse is so painful for me, I feel like we need to take intercourse off the table for a little while.
I mean, I try to not pressure you, but I obviously have needs and I feel like it affects us when we don't have sex. So I guess that means I just go to porn, or is that like what you're suggesting?
So I can tell that we have bigger issues than my No, but I don't mean to make light. Okay, let me just take it. So I,
because we have tried, like we have tried to fix this, but it's been, you know, 3 years and we haven't really gotten very far. So I don't know what you want me to do.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think about how to respond to you, husband, because I want very much to believe that my pleasure also matters to you. And I know you're afraid. I know that's probably why you're responding the way you are. But I do think that's a meaning that's alive between us, that your pleasure is more important than my freedom from pain. And so I think that's part of my body's response. And I really want a better marriage with you. I really want a marriage that we can both have pleasure in. And so I'm not saying taking intimate contact off the table. I'm talking about penetration.
Yeah, I mean, we can totally do that, whatever you suggest. I feel like we tried, but we can totally like try it. You know, I'm a little offended that you feel that way, because I feel like I've done everything you've asked and it just doesn't work. So I don't really know what to do, but I know that taking sex off the table makes our relationship way worse.
Yeah, taking sex off the table, yes. And maybe I have handled it that way out of my own anxiety to just avoid it altogether. But I want to see if we can find a way to have more pleasure and arousal together.
Yeah.
Without penetration. And you know, maybe that's what my body needs, is more trust that we like each other, that we've got each other.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt that frequently, so that would be helpful, probably.
Mm-hmm. You doubt that I like you, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't like you, but I think what I'm more afraid of is my pain and your unawareness or insensitivity to it, and so I just tell myself to stay away, and I know that's not been a good thing.
Right.
So Jess, anything you would add to that? Or
I think you did a great job. I think I may just, you know, we define sex as a connection and pleasure. And, you know, that's a very broad category, but mutual connection and pleasure is what equals good sex. Mm-hmm. So I may even say, like, this for me has not been good sex. We've had some connection. I've had some pleasure, but it is completely overshadowed by the pain that I've had. My heart is for us in our marriage to have good sex. Mm-hmm. And I want to do whatever that it takes to get there. I might need your help finding answers, though. And I don't, because I think his fear, I had a guess, is that this is going to prolong forever without an end, because that's woman's health. We go without answers for a long time. But I would say, like, let's together figure out a solution for both of us to have good, healthy, connecting, and pleasurable sex. I'm going to need your help in this by finding resources, talking to doctors, maybe asking about insurance questions, things that, you know, may be overwhelming for me. And I want to give you my assurance that I'm going to work hard to try and find answers and get healed so that we can come together through intercourse again in a way that's beautiful and good, healthy sex. So I think I would just add, speak to that fear of the, how it's been 3 years. No answers. What hope is there for me?
Yeah. And it sounds like in this marriage anyway, the avoidance has been a response. So then he's like, wait, how invested are you really? Because are you just giving me another justification for not having a sexual relationship? And so he's kind of meeting his sense of rejection with some aggression or some, you know, like, well, fine, I'll go to porn then, you know, if that's what I have to do, rather than the core trust. Because I think what you're saying, Jess, is like the reassurance that I really do want this. Mm-hmm. And I really am committed to finding a way into more mutual pleasure. And you know, working to address what's going on within me and between us.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. I like that. Like the role playing.
Oh, good.
Good job.
Yeah, good. This person says, I, a female, sometimes have painful muscle spasms in the pelvic floor muscles after orgasm with vaginal sex only. They can last hours. It is more common if I orgasm through masturbation. I've done Kegels for strengthening because my husband, who is a physical therapist, says strong muscles are less likely to cramp. However, the most intense pain is near my anus, so I'm not sure if Kegels help in that area. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Also not fun and not, And I'm so sorry this person experiencing this. I get what your husband is saying. I actually would probably lean towards what we call reverse Kegels, which are the opposite. So if a Kegel, you're contracting the pelvic floor, which are Kegels have a really great marketing campaign. They're all over the place. But I would say, a lot of women need to learn reverse Kegels, which is instead of bringing the pelvic floor up, and if this is the pelvic floor at rest, we're actually like dropping the pelvic floor down and learning how to release it.
Oh, interesting.
And lengthening it. And so you're really like extending that pelvic floor down. Because when we just do Kegels, we might be strengthening, but we sometimes are shortening those muscles and not giving them their full range of motion. And an orgasm, as fun as it is, we want our pelvic floor to enjoy that orgasm through the whole range of motion. So, but if we only teach one part of that, it is kind of like, you know, you went to the gym, you worked out your calf muscles, and then in the middle of the night, you know what you do, you accidentally move your calf the wrong way and you get that Charlie horse. The muscles have been strengthened, but if we would have maybe lengthened and stretched a little bit more, that Charlie horse may not have been so prominent. This is a little bit different, but similar thing. We want the pelvic floor muscles to go through that full range of motion. So I would say reverse Kegels would be where I'd spend most of my time. That's a skill. That's like learning to sign your name with your non-dominant hand. That's not easy, but doable, definitely doable.
And can I just interrupt, Jess? Is it like, you know, I've heard of Kegels most effectively is like imagining you're pulling an elevator up, like, and just starting with like two floors, but then also dropping the elevator two floors, one at a time. So that's the reverse then. Is that right? And then as you get stronger, you can do three floors and then you can do five floors, but you're also dropping five, four, three, two, one. And so is that the release or is it different?
I'd say it's a little different. So if you start, let's say we start at floor zero and then we release up to floor, or we squeeze up to floor two, mm-hmm. a reverse Kegel is going to go. So we, let's say we relax the Kegel, we go back to floor one, reverse Kegel is going to go to negative one, negative two.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So we're getting the full arc because we kind of have a resting neutral for the pelvis.
Does it feel a little bit like pushing outward or is it?
Yeah.
Or is it just relaxing?
It's beyond relaxing. So relaxing puts us in neutral. I don't like saying bearing down because that is a bit of extreme movement, but sometimes we'll say it's kind of like you're bearing down. You're bearing down for a bowel movement, but you're actually doing it for your vaginal muscles.
Interesting.
Yes. And it's actually really cool when you can get Kegel, reverse Kegel, and get a good arc going through like floor 10, negative 10. Sex becomes much more fun. Orgasms are much better. He can have a better experience inside because you're just the elevator's blown all over. It's a cool skill to develop. but it is a skill. So it's not like you're going to tonight probably master the reverse Kegel.
Sure. It's a skill and also a muscle strengthening. Well, mm-hmm. and then I guess the bearing down, that's very interesting. I've never heard of that. That's cool. Okay, let me give you just one more question before this person says, when you've done pelvic floor therapy, including diligent exercises in between therapy, vaginal estrogen, and still no relief, what then? What would you say to that?
This may be one of the biggest questions I get asked through social media. And I think I may have a YouTube video that addresses this because it's so common. It's also my story. I am a therapist. An occupational therapist, pelvic floor therapist. I went through pelvic floor therapy for I think 5 or 6 years, maybe. I got through all my dilators, did all my exercises because I'm supposed to. Still could not have pain-free, penetrative, amazing sex. So this person's not alone. I love pelvic floor therapy. Huge proponent of it. However, when it comes to chronic pain, it is one of the factors of the holistic picture of healing. Mm. And so I think sometimes pelvic floor therapy becomes a hindrance to our healing because we narrow down the pain to something purely physical that we need or dependent on somebody else to do to our body. When at this point, we might be needing to do more personal, physical, personal, emotional, personal, like we kind of talked about, to get that more holistic picture. And pelvic floor therapy might be that a door kind of preventing us from getting there. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say without knowing the whole story and everything. But mm-hmm. at that point, I'd say, and that's kind of where, you know, our business was kind of birthed, was like, what is the answer when pelvic floor therapy hasn't worked? Is there a lot of hope for women? Because we just spin our wheels and spiral, not knowing where to go. You go back to the doctor, they said you back to pelvic floor therapy. And then for me, someone decided it was all in my head. So I ended up in counseling with someone who wasn't aware of what vaginismus was and ended mm-hmm. up being, and so it's just, there's a lot of unknowns and it's hard. It's hard.
And so if you were just I know you've kind of given us a picture, but if you could just say like, okay, so my approach is, when someone has gone to pelvic floor therapy, it hasn't been successful. My approach is then working with the meanings. I mean, how would you describe what you see as the pathway?
So I would say we take more of a nervous system approach. What we're doing is we're creating new pathways from brain to pelvic floor that support function. You know, and the function here is usually for most clients, it's penetrative sex. There's also tampons and gynecologists and stuff. And so we're going to help support the nervous system by being regulated, not in that fight or flight state. We're also going to, in order to do that, we're going to make sure that we don't have any tropes, schemas in our brain that are keeping us in that dysregulated state. We're going to unlearn pain pathways and relearn positive pleasure, whatever we need to, pathways. Mm-hmm. And the same goes with partner. We're going to work with the partner to make sure that we unlearn and relearn and build those pathways. So everything we do for the most part is through the lens of the nervous system and getting pain out of the body from more of a central point than just like at that pelvic floor point. Because when we're going in and doing pelvic floor therapy, we're really just working on those pelvic floor muscles. And sometimes those need a little bit of work and tune up, but oftentimes, you know, you'll come in, you'll say, oh, your pelvic floor is really tight. Okay, well, I'm going to loosen it. Great, you loosened it. But guess what? You exited out of the clinic back to your typical life with and
those pelvic floor stress or anxiety.
That nervous system hadn't been worked on and it just dumped it all back in the pelvis. So you walk back in again, get released. I feel great. It worked for me. Go back into the world. So we're working on the world part. In the sense of, let's make sure that whatever we, our body experiences in this world is supporting us, not dumping that into the pelvic floor or sex or tampons or whatever it may be.
Yeah, no, I like that. It's just a little more global is not quite the right word, but just like the whole nervous system, the anxiety, the stress, the meanings that are maybe being played out in the pelvic floor area and in the vaginal tightness. And it's not that you can't do any work there, of course, but you're saying there's a larger systemic challenge often to understand and address. Yeah. It kind of reminds me, I had a client who had orgasms prior to marriage, just in making out. And then once she got married, arousal went down and she never had an orgasm. And she was now 2 decades into marriage and coming to kind of fix her broken body, right? And my response was, when I really was looking at her life, the meaning that she had been operating in is that in marriage, you go into a dutiful place, and she was married to a good guy, but she just was kind of like, constrain my life and be the dutiful citizen, the dutiful wife, the dutiful church member. And so she felt like she kind of carried a lot of stress in her body and was doing many good things in her life, but felt no sense of agency and freedom. And so I'm like, no, we're not going to work on having an orgasm. We're going to work on you feeling free. We're going to work on you owning your life, feeling more ability to be yourself in the world you live in. And that was just exceptionally important for her creating a different relationship to her sense of self, to her body, to her sexuality, to pleasure. And so it's all high, you know, I'm not saying that's always the reason, but the mind-body connection is so meaningful that often the body's trying to signal to us what's going on in our larger experience. And so it's worth our attention.
That's so true.
So we are at time. Thank you so much for being here, Jess. I really appreciate your perspectives. And where can people find you if they want to learn more about your program and what you offer?
Yes, you can find us at painfreeintimacy.com and then on most of the socials at painfree.intimacy. And then YouTube, we do have some training videos on there. And I think even the one about what if I've been to pelvic floor therapy, how's that worked? Mm-hmm. So we're around.
Great. That's wonderful. Okay, thank you so much, and thanks everyone for being here.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.